Will you read along with me as we read from Romans chapter 12, verses 9 to 21? Paul writes, "Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord.' To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink, for by doing so you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Will you pray with me? God, as we look to your word, we ask that you would guide us in truth. As we examine what it looks like to live with others, we pray that we would recall our relationships, that we would see things in us that need to be refined. And ultimately, God, we ask that we would be drawn closer to you as we seek to hear your heart and to experience your desire for us as taught in your word. And we ask this in your name. Amen. I want to start our message by saying that it's incredible to me in some ways that in the midst of what is going on in our world culturally, that we have this opportunity to read the Word of God that is timely for us even today. Even, you know, when this passage was selected to be a part of something we would cover on Sunday morning, there was no thought or notion to what we would be experiencing right now in our present context. And yet, we can read that word and we can see so many things that are relevant to the way that we treat others and to some of the deep divides that exist among us right now. This is a word that we need to hear. And what we see in Romans chapter 12, verses 9 to 21, is this rich picture of what it looks like for Christians to live in relationships with other people, to live in relationships with other people that believe things like them, to live in relationships with people that persecute them, that seek to do harm to them. We see this idea in this section, that we are a people that are called to live in genuine love, to live with this sincere love for our neighbors and for our church family and for people that even seek to do wrong to us. And there's so much in there that if there's one thing I'm a little bit disappointed about in our passage for this morning, it's that we can't cover all of it in great depth. You know, we could spend our entire message this morning just looking at the very first part of the very first verse, just this idea of letting love be genuine. We could talk all about what love is, what it looks like when love is genuine, what false love is, all kinds of different things like that. And you could do that with almost every statement in this passage. But instead of looking at it from this zoomed-in perspective, what we're going to do this morning is kind of zoom out a little bit and consider these verses as a whole as we seek to live in the way that God is instructing Christians to interact with other Christians and the world around them. And so, as a reminder, this section that we're looking at in the book as a whole is this place where Paul is talking about how Christians live in light of the gospel, in light of what God has done on their behalf through Christ. So he's saying this is what it looks like to be a follower of Jesus. And He's writing to this group of Christians that are living in a strange time for the church. You know, even while this letter was written just before a time where the church experienced kind of widespread persecution, even in the time when they received it, when they would have first read this, Christianity was not something that was really thought of in high esteem or in high status in Roman culture. There was a lot of misconceptions about this group of Christians. There was sort of an uncertainty if this was part of a Jewish offshoot, if this was a group that had broken away from Judaism, or if this was sort of a Jewish sect that was emerging. There was questions about what kind of ethnic groups could be a part of this Christian group. There were sorts of misconceptions about different things that Christians did or did not do. This wasn't a group that was prevalent in numbers. This wasn't a group that had any sort of cultural or political capital or power in the Roman Empire. This was a group that existed on the fringes. And as a result, sometimes they experienced persecution. Persecution that at times was just sort of localized. Maybe it was from a local official or a group of people in a certain town. And we see some of that in the missionary journeys of Paul. And then what we know about this Roman church is that it would just be a few years after Paul wrote this letter to them. So many of the very same people that would have read this letter, that they would experience this persecution under Nero that would be sort of widespread throughout the Roman Empire. This is a strange time for Christians as we examine what it was like when Paul wrote this letter to them. And so in many ways, the context for this church is wildly different than what we experience as Christians in the West today. You know, we can say, like, do we have hardship? Yes, we have hardship. Do we have moments that are real struggles for the church to kind of find their place culturally? Yes, those moments do exist. There are things ideal all of the time. You know, no, certainly they're not ideal in every kind of situation. But in regards to the prevalence of the Christian faith and the freedom to practice the Christian faith and just the popularity of and the number of people that identify themselves as Christians in the West, the context is different for us from the first century for sure. There's no question about that. So Paul, he writes to this group and he begins by telling them how Christians should live with one another. He begins by talking to them about how they interact with and relate to other Christians, and then he goes on to talk with them about how they interact with people that seek to persecute them, about people that how they interact with people that have problems with them. And really, in there we see a kind of a common theme, and we've seen this theme throughout the book of Romans, that for the Roman church, relationships were hard. Healthy relationships were hard. Peaceful, loving kinds of relationships were difficult. They didn't just seem to come naturally. You know, within the church, there was all of this discussion about ethnicity, the difficult distinctions that were being drawn up between Jews and Gentiles, the struggle that existed between those groups for power or dominance or influence within the local church. And then they were also living in the context of Rome, that idea that we already talked about, where there were people that would have considered them just a very strange kind of outside group that operated with a different set of beliefs and ideals or religious practices to Roman culture. And so as a result, they would be presented with situations where they could either decide to adapt or to adopt practices that did not align with their faith, so they could kind of assimilate with culture at the expense of their faith, or they could do the opposite. They could hold fast to their faith and choose not to assimilate to culture, and then it could create hardship in the relationships that they had with people. And even while there are all kinds of different ways where the context that we experience today in the West is different from the Roman culture, this idea that relationships are hard, and those kinds of struggles, even in relationships, struggles of ethnicity or struggles for dominance or struggles with this idea of assimilating or standing out in culture, those kinds of relational struggles still exist in the church today. And so Paul addresses how to have healthy relationships, or really in a sense, he addresses how to have Christian relationships with other people. And really the first verse in verse 9, it sets the tone for the rest of the chapter. To just look at that again, it says, "Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good." It begins with this encouragement to let love be genuine. In the NIV, it says that love must be sincere. This idea of a sincere love or a genuine love and care for others is part of what it means to be a Christian. We know that because we see that coming directly from Jesus in Matthew. As he talks in Matthew 22 and he's laying out the most important command is to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and that the second is like it, to love our neighbor as ourselves. Jesus is teaching this idea that having a genuine and sincere love for God and for others is the most important thing we can do to be faithful as we seek to follow him. And then Paul, he talks about how this idea of genuine and sincere love is a mark, it is a sign, it's a way that we demonstrate that we are followers of Christ. And he frames it then in kind of, you know, maybe strange terms as we think about love. He frames it by beginning in saying that we need to abhor, we need to hate, we need to categorically reject what is evil. We need to separate ourselves from anything that is evil, and then we need to hold fast to or cling on to or become inseparable from things that are good, to things that are good. We need to be a people that reject everything that is evil and accept and hold fast to everything that is good. And it's interesting that Paul begins talking about our love in this kind of way, or genuine and sincere love, because there's a lot of, you know, false loves out there. There's a lot of unhealthy kinds of loves that exist in the human heart. And it seems like Paul is addressing that right from the start, that he's talking about this idea that as we are people that cling to what is good, we need to be clinging to a love that is grounded in what God sees as good, in what God identifies as being good. And then he goes on to explain what that looks like within the church by saying in verse 10, "Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality." We get the sense here that Paul is talking about the church family, because he begins with this idea of saying he's addressing it to one another. He's talking about loving one another. And so if we imagine what it would be like for them to receive the letter, to hear a letter has come from the Apostle Paul, they would gather together, there'd be a public reading of that letter, and when they got to what would be written here, Romans chapter 12, beginning in this section, and would read "love one another," they would be hearing this in a room filled with each other, filled with other people that were followers of Jesus. And so he gives them this instruction, and it's this rich picture of what it looks like to be in relationships with each other. And so, again, in this idea of kind of zooming out and seeing the big picture of this, I want us to imagine what it would look like to be a people that live in this kind of way. What it would look like if Christians and Christian groups and church bodies, if they looked like what Paul describes here. To kind of put some of it in our, you know, maybe more contemporary language, let's envision what it would look like if we were in a group that loved one another like family. You know, if we think of whether it's kind of a large family gathering at a holiday or a family reunion, or even if it's just a family that gets together every weekend for a meal or something like that, there's this idea, this idyllic image of what it looks like for families to just love one another and to love being together in a space. This is kind of that image that Paul's getting at when he talks about loving one another with brotherly affection. It's describing a group of people that go above and beyond what would be reasonable or expected to honor and to show love to and to care for one another. You know, so often what can develop in relationships with people is that they go above and beyond to demonstrate their own worth or their own honor or their own kind of a standing in opposition to other people. And Paul is saying that should be different inside a church. You shouldn't be seeking to elevate your own status or to prove that you are worthy, but you should be seeking to highlight and to go above and beyond to celebrate and to demonstrate how other people are worthy. It's a group that's passionate about serving the Lord together. It's a group that lives with hope for the future, that can rejoice, be happy, be glad together for what God will do, and at the same time, be patient with one another in those moments of suffering. It's a group that pursues God together. It's a group that takes care of one another. And it's a group in that idea of showing hospitality. It's a group that loves to serve and to be present with one another. That sounds awesome. You know, it sounds incredible to be a part of a group that would live in that kind of a way. And Paul's laying out that that's what it looks like for God's people, for the church, to live with a genuine sense of love for one another. And then we won't read the entire next section again, but then Paul goes from addressing what it looks like to love one another as a church to loving people, not just people that are outside of the faith, or not just to loving neighbors that maybe don't know Jesus or something like that, but particularly to how they relate to people that seek to persecute Christians, people that seek to persecute the church. And without reading that whole section again, to begin with just verse 14, it says, "Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another." And we can kind of sum up what he says in this section with two of those ideas. This idea that we bless those, even those who persecute us, and that we seek to live in harmony with one another. Again, to kind of zoom out, to think about what these first three verses say, and then to consider the rest of the chapter, what we just read, it kind of describes that the relationships that Christians should have with people that seek to persecute them are that they should bless them and not speak poorly of them, that they should show empathy towards them, that they should rejoice and be happy with them when good things are going on in their lives, and that they should weep or mourn with them when things that grieve them are taking place. That Christians should never be people that consider themselves higher than others or better than others, but that they should do all they can to be honorable and to honor others. That Christians should not be people that are concerned with avenging wrongs, but that they should be concerned with living in peace with everyone as far as they have control over that. And that they should be the kind of people that seek to take care of others and to meet others' needs, even among those people that seek to mistreat them or harm them or persecute them. And you know, there are certainly differences listed out in these two sections in how Christians either relate to the church or how they relate to people that seek to persecute or cause harm to the church. It should look different. The level of relationships or the intimacy, the closeness that exists within relationships of people that you're deeply connected to and people that are trying to harm you. But even though there are some differences there, there are these kind of big ideas that we see as we consider this passage. And we see that as believers in Jesus, that we should be people that seek to honor and care for all people. That we should be the kind of people that seek to not just live in a constant state of conflict where we're avenging wrongs and highlighting wrongs, but that we should be the kind of people that seek to live at peace with others that are around us. In both lists, we see this kind of idea that Christians are supposed to be the kind of people that demonstrate genuine and sincere love for others. And so let's take a moment this morning to imagine if this is what life looked like. And that can almost seem ridiculous in the culture that we live in and in the midst of all of the deep divides that we experience and just kind of the toxicity that seems to permeate relationships within our culture. But can you imagine what it would be like if followers of Jesus had relationships like what Paul describes in Romans chapter 12? And maybe even just begin by imagining how your life and your relationships might look differently. You know, as I consider my life and as I think about what Paul wrote in this passage, you know, the first thing that came out to in my mind was that I can be sort of just a grade A retaliator. You know, that if there's a perceived insult, even if it isn't an actual insult, I have this penchant that I can immediately become defensive, that I can feel like a harsh word towards me deserves to be met with a harsh word back at that person. It's this idea that I need to make sure that I'm treated fairly, or that I need to make sure that I'm treated with some proper sense of honor, rather than living in the way that Paul describes in seeking to be someone that honors and cares for and demonstrates genuine love towards other people. That's kind of what jumped out to me in my heart, in my life, in the way that I often act with others. And I'm sure that for each of us, as we read through that list, there could be something there that we could say, you know, I really struggle with that kind of notion. I struggle with that idea of hospitality or helping other people that are in need. I struggle with that idea of living at peace with people that have different ideas than I do. There could be any number of ways that we struggle as we read through something like Romans chapter 12. And of course, the truth is that what it boils down to for many of us is that we struggle to love our neighbors as ourselves. That we struggle with this idea that Jesus instructed us in, this idea that Paul illuminates for us about what it looks like to live it out. We struggle with this idea to love other people and to honor other people more than we love and seek to have ourselves be honored. But imagine how your life might look differently if you treated other people like Paul describes in Romans chapter 12. And imagine even how the legacy of our church, how our church might look differently if we lived in this kind of way. Imagine if we had a legacy, had a reputation, if we were the kind of people that just really sought to outdo each other in honoring people. If we were the kind of people that sought the Lord together passionately, if we were the kind of people that cared for others, that welcomed others well in a sense of hospitality, if we were genuine in expressing love and care for others in that kind of a way, if that was just prevalent among us, imagine how that could change the neighborhood that we're located in here, the relationships that we have with people outside of the church, and really how that could transform our city, our area, for the sake of the gospel. Imagine if this is what the church was like at large, not just our church, but the church. If we lived in this kind of a way, in the world that we live in that is just toxic and divided and that seems just to have this desire to tear itself apart and to tear each other down, if the church, the most prevalent religion in the West, was living in the way that Paul lays out in Romans chapter 12, we would see the transformation of culture. We would see a flourishing that would begin to develop as people that were in need were cared for. We would see this sense of genuine love and care for other people begin to permeate our world. And this is a tall order. You know, anytime you begin with this idea of imagining something, there can be all of these reasons why it can seem like, sure, I can imagine how nice that would be, but it's never actually going to take place. It's never going to happen. And I could fall into believing something like that if it weren't for two things. And the first is this. In Romans chapter 5, verse 8, Paul writes, "But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Jesus doesn't just tell us to be people that love others like we love ourselves, that love our neighbors like we love ourselves. Jesus demonstrates that on our behalf while we were still sinners, while we were enemies of God, while we were far from him. God demonstrates his love for us by sending Christ, and Christ demonstrates his love for us by being that sacrifice for us on our behalf. And the reality is that we can never really demonstrate that kind of a love for other people, a genuine and sincere love for people, until we have received that from him. And the second thing that lets me know that this is possible, that this isn't just a dream that we have to imagine that can never become a reality, is that this is exactly what we see when we look at history, and even the extra-biblical history that examines the church in Rome. What we know is that the Roman church became this people that loved and cared for others well, that didn't just seek to love and care for those that could provide them with, you know, privilege or advantage or cultural capital or things like that, but that they became known as this group of people that loved and cared for outcasts, that they became known as this group of people that loved and cared for those that were on the fringes, for the people that were in need of help, the people that were experiencing injustice. They met their needs. They welcomed them in. They showed them genuine love. They showed them sincere care. They honored them. And in this, the church in Rome quickly went from this obscure group that existed on the fringes to the most prevalent religion in the Roman Empire. Let's be a similar kind of people. A people that practice genuine and sincere love and care for others.